Hashtag embrace the grind. We work for the fans. We work for the 71 Division I teams. Hashtag don't quit.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Weekend Preview Podcast. I am joined once again by a mobile Quint Kesnick. Quint, you're calling hockey with this week. Where in the world are you?
I'm mobile. I'm in Trumbull, Connecticut, on the outskirts of lovely Bridgeport, Connecticut, for the regionals. We got Notre Dame, Michigan Tech, Clarkson, and Providence. Two games Friday, one game Saturday. Winner advances to the Frozen Four in Minneapolis, April 5 and April 7.
And you attended practice on Wednesday and went out to dinner with Barry Melrose on Wednesday
Sorry,
night.
I went to Yale lacrosse practice.
Yes, Yale lacrosse or Barry Melrose. What's better?
Well, Barry told a story today about how he had a cow. See, when he grew up in Saskatchewan, you know, he lived on a farm. He calls it a rock farm because every time it rained, more rocks came to the surface. But when he was 13, he had this little cow, and it got hit by lightning. And he said one of the harder moments in his life was when he had to go out to the field and he saw this calf that he had raised from infancy was dead. He also talked about raising a pig one time that had 16 little piglets. Unfortunately, the mommy pig proceeded to lay on those piglets, so only three survived. This is a story today at our production meeting. So there's always fascinating knowledge coming from Farmer Barry.
And what did you take away from the practice?
Well, first of all, let's go back. I got a couple takeaways I want to talk about. Wrestling. My biggest takeaway from the tournament was poise and a belief. So if you want to play in Boston, if you want to play in the NCAA tournament, you got to be poised in those one goal games. I saw some great examples of wrestlers who maintained or didn't maintain their poise, and that made the difference in the last 15 seconds of a match. And then belief. The common trait of all the winners is a strong belief. And that belief is fortified by work and confidence, putting in the time. And so that's what teams are trying to do right now, build their belief. And belief is that's earned, you know. What was your question about Yale? Oh, Yale's practice was fascinating. I got there right as practice was starting. They were a little late because the facility didn't open up on time. You know, they have an 8 o'clock practice. Well, the guy was there at like 7:59 to open the place up. So they were, and the coach was a little ticked. The guy's got to get taped. They got to get warmed up. But it was a fun watch. It was very valuable. I hope that my knowledge comes in handy. I learn a lot by watching practice. Just by the way, the biggest thing I learned was the way they're teaching invert defense, and the way they want guys to, you know, make the offensive player declare a side, whether he's driving righty or lefty, and then get your stick behind him as a middie, knowing that you're going to have an adjacent slide there. And once he declares to that one side, they really want to keep him there. You know, they're very much teaching against the rollback. You know, the worst thing you can do is overplay one side, they roll back the other and gain a step or two advantage. So it's fascinating to watch that being taught. You know, Coach Shea and I had a long discussion before practice, and even after practice, we discussed some things that I saw from a personnel standpoint. You know, Ben Reeves' stick wasn't quite as sharp as he'd like to see, I think. But his speed is just ungodly, and his skills are incredible. I thought Kotler, with the sophomore middie, when his feet are set, he can really bomb from the outside. I like their defense. In general, I thought their defensive personnel looked better than their offensive personnel. They got some really good young defenders and some veterans. You know, Jerry O'Connor has great feet. Robert Mooney, I loved his wingspan. You got Keating, who's a monster. In person, he was much more bulky and strong than he looks on tape. And then the freshman, Chris Fake, who has been covering the opponent's number one guy, I thought was very impressive. I took a photo of their head sleeves. If you haven't seen it, go to my Twitter account. But it went viral, like, to times 10. It's approaching, like, 800 likes. And these are these head sleeves they wear over their helmets, which shrinks the window of vision. So it kind of shrinks your peripheral vision, which does two things. Head on a swivel more, Terry, because you got to move. And then B, communication and defenders helping each other out. and then maybe even C is using your stick as an antenna, to especially when you're on the inside. You know, too often I see defenders who aren't using their stick. Get your stick and put it on the offensive player. Use it as an antenna. A, offensive players hate it. B, you can swivel your head and take your eye off him if your stick is on him, and that becomes a longer extension of your arm.
I've been to Yale's practice. I went to a fall session last fall, and the thing I came away was their compete level and their physicality was unlike anything I had seen previously.
It was good this day. You know, he warned me. He said they had gone hard on Monday and Tuesday, so today wasn't as intense of a day. But I saw great examples of guys going at it and playing hard in the moment. Tyler Warner, there was one example of his leadership where one of his teammates, and I'm guessing it was a younger teammate, didn't play up to the standard that he as a veteran thought was appropriate, and he got after that player. I like to see that. I thought there were some things, you know, again, this is a one practice, and they're getting ready for their game with Princeton. I'd like to see them operate with a little more. They did some transition stuff, but everything seems to be kind of, I don't want to say robotic, just kind of vanilla in their schemes. You know, they to me look very much like a Duke or a Notre Dame in the way they approach the game of lacrosse. You know, they'll run if given the opportunity. They're good in their half field sets. Their defense is probably extremely buttoned up. They you know, Andrew Baxter does a great job. Multiple slide packages from what I saw. They got some zone that, you know, they practiced a little of that too. So, but what can separate them? You know, and I would say with this year's group, having a player like Ben Reeves maybe can be the separator and getting that defense really, really tight. They got a young goalie. Their Fogo was off on the side the entire practice. Don't get me started there, Terry, because that was – the guy is not on the lacrosse team, okay? That's all I'll say, Fogos. I couldn't be more appalled at the field goal kicker nature of his practice. And it's not that way every day, but just because of the way this practice mapped out, the guy's not a member of the lacrosse team. He's over in the corner working on his clamps and his quick hands. And the rest of the team's actually playing lacrosse. That's a two-hour just a two-hour cross segment of his season. That's what I saw. And then when he did participate in some of the full field stuff, his stick work was atrocious.
I've made that argument many times. They tend to let you know when they disagree. Quint, I can't believe we've gone this long into the podcast without talking about the biggest result of the week. One of the downsides of hosting the weekend preview podcast is that games have been hashed and rehashed by the time we get around to them. Not so. I think we get a unique opportunity to share our unvarnished thoughts on Michigan's 13-12 win over Notre Dame in South Bend on Wednesday night. What an unbelievable result. I think there are a couple of different ways that you can parse out this victory, but before getting into how it happened, I want to get your thoughts on what it means that it happened, particularly for Michigan. What does this win mean for the program?
Taking a giant step in the right direction. First win over a top five team, first road win over a ranked team. I went back and I looked at some of their notable wins since their inception, and you know, they beat a bad Rutgers team 1 year. They've beaten some other Midwest teams. They just haven't had a win over a successful team. The way this win kind of jumps out at you, the Wolverines. You know, I mentioned it last week when I included them in my top 20, and really my reason. I honestly saw this happening, maybe not so soon, but I wrote, you know, this is a team that's going to jump up and upset somebody in the conference, and I really believed that. This result, though, did catch me a little off guard, quite honestly. I gave them a number 20 vote because I think they were a little better than people were giving them credit for. You know, that their losses are very competitive to good teams. You know, their wins weren't great, but I think they were turning the corner. You know, when you beat a Cleveland State, a Bellarmine, a Siena, an Air Force, blah. But they beat Marquette. In a year, Marquette's 3-3 right now, and I just think I'd much rather give them the 20th vote. This was my mindset last week. I'm like, I'd rather give this team that I still think has room to grow with Kevin Connery, their new head coach, with a very talented offense, with a hungry mindset. I just think there's more there. There's upside there. So I gave them the 20 vote ahead of a team like North Carolina, who had lost three straight, and the latest loss was to Richmond. And I just have no tolerance for giving a team like that right now in this point in the season that 20th spot. So, you know, that trust in Michigan was validated quickly, and I was a little bit surprised, but their offense was great. You know, Brent Noseworthy is a top 10 midfielder in the country. They've got a lot of talent. Mack and Curran and Tommy Height continues to play really well, and that was the story of this game. When you just look at it in hindsight, Notre Dame continues to get insufficient goaltending. It cost them the Maryland game, that and faceoffs, and then you only make, you know, a handful of saves and give up 13 goals. You're just not going to be quality competition the way this game is being played right now if your specialists are extremely below par. They got decent enough faceoff, but they lost this game clearly between the pipes.
That's the way I slice it. Either you give credit to Michigan's offense, and particularly the overall team mindset of continuing to make plays when Notre Dame would match. So the vibe I got from this game was that Michigan was always a goal ahead, and then Notre Dame would even up. And then Michigan would score to go ahead, Notre Dame would even up. And to me, that's impressive because a program that has not attained a win like this, you can imagine a scenario whereby they start gripping the stick too tight when they think about the implications of the win. And it just felt like that never really happened. They continue to make plays. And obviously with a guy like Noseworthy, who can kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say carry the team, because Patrick McEwen did a nice job on InsideLacrosse.com of laying out what Decker Curran brings to the table and, you know, what some of the other contributors, particularly Kevin Mack and Alex Buchanavage, the two freshman attackmen, are doing to create like a more rounded offensive attack. But certainly Noseworthy is a do-it-all player for them. And that's to be commended. But on the other hand, Notre Dame made two saves and allowed 13 goals. If they come anywhere within a spitting distance of a reasonable save percentage, arguably they win this game 12-8, which is very in line with what expectations might have been heading into this one. So I'm ambivalent on which direction deserves more attention.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I saw there is a box score that has Notre Dame with a few more saves, six, in fact, but only two in the second half. So I'm not sure whose data is actually correct. I'd have to watch the film again. But I agree with your statement about Michigan. They've been in close games with good teams before and found a way to lose. They finally found a way to win. And that's a great thing, because that kind of confidence, it can be, you can try to convince yourself that, hey, today's our day. Today's the day we get over the hump. But until you do it, it's always going to be difficult. So they finally did it. And now this team could take a giant leap forward. We'll see. They play Maryland on BTN on Saturday at noon, next week. Maryland's had kept North Carolina out in California. So Michigan's got a lot of tests left. That's Maryland Saturday, the following Saturday noon on BTN. But as far as Notre Dame's concerned, I mean, you look at their two losses. We talked about the specialists. The other thing that stands out is breakout performances from opposing midfielders. Connor Kelly with 10 points. Brent Noseworthy, 6 points, 5 goals and an assist. And for all the good that Notre Dame has done defensively, there are times that their stubbornness or lack of adaptation to the opponent, hey, we won't change. We're not going to change for anybody. Well, I think that's foolhardy to play defense in this era when a guy like Connor Kelly is involved in 10 out of 12 goals and Noseworthy is involved in 6 out of 13 goals. I think they have to do a better job at orchestrating their defense to stop the opponent's strengths.
Other news from the week, midweek results. Albany started slow, opened up the floodgates on Canisius en route to a 19-11 victory. Big A's for Toho Kananikoak and Connor Fields. T. Erland continues to just dominate from the faceoff X.
You know, what caught me off guard is I'm watching this thing online and I'm seeing, ooh, Canisius jumps on him, 4-1. And next thing you know, Albany rattles off a 16-goal run. I mean, we don't see that very often. I think I mentioned it 2 weeks ago, though, you know, Albany can play subpar lacrosse and beat these teams in their league. And my long-term concern is that you get softened by the level of competition in their league, the America East, where they dusted Vermont, who appears to be the second-best team in the league. They dust Canisius. So they still have to play Harvard out of league, and they still have to play Yale out of league. And, You know, if you're Scott Marr, sometimes it's tough to convince your team that you need to get better. And doing that off a loss is easy, but doing it off of some of these wins is going to be difficult. So I worry about a team like that playing the schedule that they play, not improving as much as they'll need to. UMass Lowell is next, 4-4. They play Harvard on the 28th. That's a midweek game. Harvard's got a nice record, 6-1. They haven't beaten anybody. But then 2-5 Stony Brook, 2-5 UMBC, 1-7 Binghamton. They finish up with Hartford, 3-4. Yale's on the 22nd, and Yale's 5-1. So they got to get something out of these Harvard and Yale non-league games.
Lehigh, big road W on the Hempstead Turnpike over Hofstra. And Penn, 9-8 over Bucknell for a nice Eastern Pennsylvania win. Had it not been for Michigan's win over Notre Dame, though, the story of midweek would have been Harvard's epic comeback that culminated in a 19-18 victory over Boston University. The Terriers continue to struggle to close.
Just unbelievable. You're down 6 with 7 minutes to go, and somehow Harvard manages to win that game. Morgan Cheek with a historic performance for Harvard, would have put up 13 points. 19-18 overtime win. That's their second overtime game of the year. They've shown now 5 straight games where they get to double digits. They can score. They got Dartmouth on the 24th. That's this weekend. And then midweek or at Albany next week. Tough schedule after that, though. 4 out of Harvard's last 5 games are on the road. And listen to this. At Albany, at Cornell, at Penn, at Yale. Home against Princeton. So things could go south here. There's some people who think that Harvard is vastly overrated. They haven't beaten anybody. And I would kind of agree with you. They've beaten nobody with a record greater than 500.
Trimeno protein-infused water has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. It is ideal before, during, or after your workout. Hydrate with a beverage as versatile as you are. Play hard, not hungry. Last week we talked about your exposure to wrestlers. What differentiates how hockey players fuel for 60 minutes on the ice?
Well, the hockey experience is even more brutal than the lacrosse experience, I think, in terms of the intensity that they compete at. And so the only good news with hockey is it's, you know, hard for a minute, off, hard for a minute, off, then they get a little break in between periods. But you know, the demands are very similar to the lacrosse athlete in terms of fuel, rest, cardio, balance of skill, strength, power, and toughness.
Go beyond hydration with Trimeno protein-infused water packed with protein and vitamins to sustain your game. No sugar, no carbs, no fats, only 28 calories, 100% of your daily recommended allowance of B3, B5, B6, B12. 7 delicious flavors, coconut pineapple, peach, strawberry lemonade, mixed berry, raspberry limeade, orchard, and citrus. Protein never tasted so good. On to the news. On Thursday, it's Wharton announced the first editions to its watch list. Those players were Gerard Urseri, Peter Conley, Foster Huggins, Michael Kraus, Johnny Mazza, Token Anacoke, Andrew Pettit, Max Tuttle. Andrew Pettit will be a guest on this podcast here shortly. Congratulations to him. There are a lot of guys on the watch list, Quint. That's all I've got to say about that.
Yeah, every Division I player in America is on my watch list. I will add one thing from hockey practices today. Talking to these, we talked about 5 or 6 players from each team and the coaches. 2 things that jump out that I'm going to carry over into lacrosse. One would be toughness. You know, the hockey athlete going into the corner, you're rewarded if you're the first guy there to the puck and you earn the puck for your team. The downside is you're going to get your face lit up into the boards and you're going to pay the price. So that's the tough play in hockey. You know, digging the puck out of the corner, knowing that you're going to get buried. The other thing that stands out from this tournament is immediacy, because hockey, you know, possession is not as defined in hockey as it is in lacrosse. This is a single elimination tournament, 16 teams, NCAA championships, where one mistake can be catastrophic. So the immediacy of your shift, every shift is the most important shift of the season, of the game, of your life. That's the approach that lacrosse athletes need to have on a weekly basis. Just getting in that mindset, like, this is the shift. For those Michigan athletes, when they were taking the, you know, that game was tied up, 12-12, 11-11, or whatever it was, you know, those shifts, that's the playoff-like mentality that you got to have, that shift's the most important. And you try to bring that back into practice. You try to bring that, when you guys do situational stuff in practice, up a goal, down a goal, up two, you know, man up, man down, try to make it as game-like as possible, because you need to have that immediacy. And that's what stood out today talking to the hockey athletes.
One of the things that you're describing could also be described as suddenness, where you go from an innocuous play to the play that costs you the game. Or you make something out of nothing and you turn it into the play that won you the game. And it's one of the things that was the starkest takeaway for me from watching the final round of the wrestling tournament, particularly that Ohio State, Penn State, Bo Nickel matchup, where he went from being taken down to winning his team the national championship in the span of conservatively 4.5 seconds. It was such a quick turn of events, such amazing drama.
Yeah, and you know, the lacrosse version of that is a goal-scoring chance in one direction that is foiled by a pipe, by a save, by a trail check, and is brought the other way in transition. And then the next face-off that's popped in that same way in transition. So things can change fast. And you know, that immediacy, I think, is what makes sport so compelling. You know, we never know what's going to happen.
One thing that has not changed very quickly or really at all is my top 10 for the player of the year watch. It bears striking resemblance to the preseason list. I posted it on InsideLacrosse.com on Thursday. Make sure you check it out. Connor Fields, number one. Justin Gutterding, number two. Pat Spencer, number three. Connor Kelly, number four. Beyond that, a pair of face-off specialists, T.D. Erlin and Trevor Baptiste, who for me are, for all intents and purposes, tied. And then beyond that, you've got four, five, six attackmen, all with similar resumes. Really, Ben Reeves, the one that rises above, given his two-time Tewerton finalist resume that he brings to this conversation. Anything about that surprise you? And if you had to guess right now, who would win the award?
I think there's only going to be, well, I think you're going to need five invites this year. I don't see two Fogos in the top six. I think TD has clearly been the better Fogo so far this season based on percentages, based on his performances in the key wins. You know, I saw Baptiste live against Duke in the fourth quarter. He was not good. Three turnovers. I then saw him lose another game at Notre Dame where he wasn't exceptional as well. I you know, he's still 73 or 74%. But TD would have to be my first teamer in that category right now based on his numbers and what the teams have done. You know, Fields, terrific. Another stellar outing. Gutterding, so productive for a top five team. Pat Spencer's highlights. I mean, I was at the gym last week with one of my older gym mates, and the guy was showing me. The guy was demoing. He goes, you know, Jimmy Lewis, when I watched him at Navy, he used to come in like this and flip the ball over his shoulder and score. He goes, he was the best. So I take out my phone. I finished my workout. I chased him down, got my phone, and I showed him the highlight of Pat Spencer scoring that backhanded crazy goal in between three guys against Navy's defense, which apparently doesn't believe in any kind of body contact. And he goes, wow, Jimmy Lewis never did that. So he could see it in 1 second and see how talented Pat Spencer was. And then lastly would be Connor Kelly and the numbers he's putting up from that pseudo offensive midfield slash attack position. He's been terrific, so I can't complain. I think the next group of guys that you mentioned at the bottom of that list, in order to be a legitimate Tewerton candidate, I believe your team's got to make the playoffs. So a Michael Sowers, a Teat, you know, those are guys who may be left on the roadside here as things heat up in the month of April and May.
Quint, we've got a new sponsor to the Inside Lacrosse podcast.
We do?
Yeah. You're going to be here? You're going to be
here?
No. Well, I guess it depends on your definition. It's a company called Hims. They were founded in 2017, and they're dedicated to male wellness. So you can imagine the type of issues that they deal with. And you'll have to visit 4hims.com in order to learn a little bit more about it. The one that certainly hits closest to home for me, I don't think it's much of a secret that I'm losing my hair. It's
you are.
Yeah.
I don't.
You can't relate.
I didn't know you wanted to talk about that.
But it's not an uncommon problem. And I would imagine that there are a lot of guys listening to our show right now who are considering, oh man, is there something I could or should do about it? And my proposal is check out 4hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and more. But it's interesting because, you know, just to open up the curtain a little bit on how these types of things work, I had a call with a representative from the company in order to understand a little bit more about, you know, what they wanted to communicate. And I came away being really impressed by their model because, you know, they are building a business around this industry of telemedicine, which is exploding, and they're coming up with solutions that utilize like generic versions of really well-known products. So, you know, obviously the Propecia Rogaine-esque products, but because of their model, like it's so inexpensive that insurance never really even has to come into play. So the call to action is right now, our listeners get a trial month for just $5 while supplies last. See the website 4hims.com/lacrosse. Once again, that's 4hims.com/lacrosse to learn more. It's worth checking out. Not only that, but also I will say the website does not take itself very seriously. There's a lot of jokes on there that I think our listeners will enjoy. Let's just say I think Mark Dixon might have had a hand in creating some of the copy.
Dixie could be their poster boy.
4hims.com/lacrosse. All right. Well, with that, I mentioned that Lehigh attackman Andrew Pettit will join us on the podcast. And let's go ahead and turn up the volume for Mountain Health Country right now.
Engineers, baby. Lehigh rolling, rolling.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Lehigh attackman Andrew Pettit, whose Mountain Hawks are off to a racing start this year. Andrew, how would you characterize the belief that this team has brought to the field this year?
It's something that I think we're really proud of ourselves, and we stick together greatly. I mean, it's a team that not many people really believed in to start the season, and we knew we were capable of bigger things than where people thought we stood. And we really just worked really hard this fall and stayed within ourselves, and it's started to pay off here. Springtime, it's even.
One of the things that impresses me most about this squad is your balance at both ends of the field. Obviously, your offense is producing, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second, but your defense has brought a really extensive attitude, it seems, to the field. How do you characterize what practice is like when you guys compete against each other?
Practice every day is a battle, and that's something that Coach Cassis loves, and we always go offense versus defense, and the score of the drill is always really close, and that's something we take pride in, being good on both sides of the ball. And we've had a couple games this year where maybe one side didn't show up, and it led to lackluster performance. Like for us, like North Carolina, maybe our defense didn't show up as much as our offense, and then for Rutgers, our offense didn't show up as much as our defense, and that really showed where we lost both of those games. And I think we're at a point now where the whole team has started to come together and both sides are showing up on the ball, and it's led to our team playing unbelievable, and it's something we're really proud of.
You're part of a junior class that has a lot of contributors in it. What's it been like going through two prior seasons of development with this group, and how has your group meshed with a senior class to form an upperclassman leadership core?
Yeah, so for our freshman year, we were actually lucky enough to have probably eight freshmen in our class either play or start on the team as freshmen. So we've been blessed to have a lot of experience under our belts now coming into our third season. And it's something that I think has paid off greatly, having two full years under your belt of experience. And this year, I mean, our senior class is only about five deep. So we kind of look at our junior class and our senior class as one unit. And a lot of the senior guys and junior guys are maybe some of the best friends on the team. So it's been nice to have kind of that upper class be able to take care of the lower classes and show them the way, and especially with all the experience we've had over the past 2 years.
You've got 25 goals and 17 assists in the season. How do you describe your role on this team?
I think that our whole offense is kind of just a unit that works together. So I think that maybe my statistics are just a great showing of how good of a unit we are together. I mean, I'm normally maybe fortunate enough to be the last guy that touches the ball, but it doesn't really show up on the stats that there's four unbelievable passes before maybe a tap-in goal finish. So I think that it just goes to show how great of a unit we are together, and I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Mountain Hawks 7-2, coming off of a 13-8 win over Hofstra at midweek. It's well known that the Hempstead Turnpike is a difficult place to play. How did that game unfold from your perspective?
Yeah, and Coach, being a Long Island guy, brought that up. He said it's never easy to come up to Hofstra and play them on their home turf. So we kind of started out a little slow, and we went down 3-0. And Coach, he was really settled in. He said, look, we knew we weren't going to come out hot, but let's win the game from here on out. And I think he really settled the guys in, and we all trust him with anything. So the team kind of settled in. We all talked to each other. Found out what was working and just played a great rest of the game, I feel like.
Squaring your sights on Navy, they come to town Saturday. What have you seen from the midshipmen on film?
Navy's always a tough team to play. They're very disciplined, as you'd imagine, from a Girls Academy, so that's something we always have to look out for when we're playing these two teams, the Navy or Army, is that you really have to cross your T's and dot your I's in your scouting and make sure you have everything covered. And I think we're gonna dive into the film room a little bit next couple of days and figure out what we need to do to beat them.
You're 4-0 in the Patriot League. How do you and how does your group as a team regard the identity of the Patriot League and how up and down it can be and how taxing it is to play 8 conference games before setting your sights on a 3-round conference tournament?
Yeah, I think the Patriot League is almost different than any other league in the country in that sense that there's 8 teams and every single game that anyone could win. It's a really scrappy league, and that just keeps everyone on their toes at all times and prepare for every game like it's your last. And I think we've done that this year, and we hope to continue to do that and see how we fare in the rest of the league play starting this weekend against Navy.
Well, Andrew, I don't know whether or not you were able to see this one coming, but I can't let you get off the phone without asking you about that viral goal from earlier this season. If you don't know which one I'm talking about, make sure you do a Twitter search to find a clip or find it on Instagram. But basically, toe drag into a inverted one-handed cradle into a kind of seamless shot. Just first of all, can you describe it in your words? And second of all, is that something that you worked on or did it just kind of come out of nowhere?
No, to be honest, I don't know if I've ever done that before. I think I just was playing kind of without a conscious, playing freely with my team, and just happened to work out that way, and it worked out pretty naturally. I'm glad it did. It was pretty cool watching that goal kind of make its waves around, and it was interesting, and I'm just happy it helped our team get the win.
Anything like that ever happened to you before, and what was it like just from a response, and did you know people reaching out to you that you hadn't heard from or spoken to in years or whatever? Like what's it like to go viral?
I was pretty interesting, to be honest. I definitely got a lot of Instagram followers who I'd never seen before, and it was pretty cool time for a day or two to kind of be the center of attention for maybe a goal that you had. And now I understand kind of what it's like for all the big-time guys that do it day in and day out, and I just hope to get there one day.
Excellent. Well, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congrats on the 7-2 start. best of luck as you can continue to prepare for Navy and the rest of your Patriot League and non-conference schedule. Good one against Cornell there in the middle of April. Nice out-of-conference barometer for the two programs. Best of luck as you continue to prepare, and we look forward to watching the rest of your season and hopefully talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. Here we go.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Georgetown goaltender Nick Morocco, whose Hoyas are off to a fast start and squaring their sights on Big East play with the Marquette Golden Eagles up next. Nick, how do you characterize the start that your team is off to?
I mean, I think, yeah, we had a strong start for sure. It's always great when you're on the winning side of games, but like we say every day, we're just trying to go 1-0 every day, trying to win the little things every day, whether that's practice, film, or even just lift every day. So, you know, we're just trying to take it day by day. I think we're trying to make sure everyone knows, the younger guys especially, that even though we're winning, you gotta come to play each and every game, because as we've seen, anyone could beat anyone these days. So, you know, you gotta kind of take every opponent very strongly and come prepared for every game.
As a senior who's started, you know, dating back to your freshman season, does anything feel different about this 2018 version of the Hoyas?
Yeah, I think a lot of things. I mean, especially just with my class, we've started out all together freshman year and we're still here all together. I think it's something to say for the type of bond we have as a class, and I think we've tried to kind of develop that since our freshman year. I think, you know, the seniors our freshman year did a good job of trying to instill that within us as a freshman, and, you know, I think just this year everyone's really bought in, and we've definitely had our ups and downs, especially the past 2 years, but I think those have definitely helped us learn along the way, and I think just take it into this year where since the beginning of this year, we really try to stress relationships, whether that's with the freshmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors. We try to build a strong bond within our team, and I think that's definitely carrying us through the first half of the season. I think just we got to obviously work on some little things on the field, but I think that especially is something special with our team that I definitely take into account.
One of the things that strikes me about your squad is how balanced you are, both in terms of each end of the field, the offense and the defense, both top 15 in terms of adjusted efficiency, you know, facing off at 45%, saving about 53% on the year. How does that manifest itself in terms of the way you think the staff game plans and in terms of the way that you guys compete in practice? It's not as if one end of the field or one unit is carrying the team. You know, it really is a top to bottom, everyone's contributing type of vibe and dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's definitely huge for this year. Our defense has definitely stepped up big time this year. We have a lot of young guys like Gibson Smith, who just came as a freshman and who's been stepping up real big. I think, you know, we're pretty inexperienced coming into this year as a defense, but I think they've definitely done a great job. And just coming into practice, it's a battle every day, and I think that's something that we, you know, when we have long weeks like this coming up to a Marquette game, we try to make sure everyone's competing every day. I think that definitely helps the offense. We have a strong offense, but I think when our defense is trying to, you know, get after them every practice, it definitely makes them better. And then with their talent, it definitely is improving our defense every day. And our coaches do a great job of game planning for whatever opponent's coming up. And I think whether that's on the offensive or defensive end, I think we've done a pretty good job of keeping that compete level pretty high.
What's the season been like for you? How are you seeing the ball, stopping the ball, and controlling your defense?
I think, you know, as a senior, it's a little bit of a different feel. I feel, you know, you feel more of a leadership role, more obligation to try to lead your defense, especially with a little bit of an inexperienced defense coming in. But I think certain guys like Connor Moran have stepped up, and he's been a huge leader for our defense as well, and that's definitely helped me out a lot. And I think just one of the big things for me personally, just working on my consistency, and I think that's something I've done a lot better of a job this year. And obviously, just for our team, that's pretty important and helpful. Just going from game to game, you know, consistency is a huge part of a goalie play, and I think that's been a big improvement for me, and I'm just trying to, you know, take every game, especially going into Big East play, trying to step up my game any way I can.
When, as a goalie, this is a two-part question. The first part is it fair to ask you the question? And basically, how much attention do you pay to either the goalie at the other end of the field in a given game, or during the week between games, what other goalies are doing, whether you're just checking out a game on the internet or watching film or checking the stats online? How much attention do you pay to the landscape of D1 lacrosse in terms of the way other goalies are playing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's tough to ignore how other goalies are playing, but I think the big thing for just the goalie mentality, you're trying to focus on yourself and trying to improve the little things within your game, because every goalie has different techniques and a different way they play their style. I think that's something I've realized over time, and you can't really, it's hard to compare one goalie to another exactly within a game, but certainly it's a tough thing to ignore how another goalie's playing, whether that's stats or not. But I just try to, you know, just try to, especially when that's in game, I try to focus on the next shot, whether if a goal just went in, definitely focusing on the next shot and just trying to figure out after the game what I did wrong and moving on from there. But yeah, I think it's definitely a learning experience from game to game for me.
So that being said, one of the reasons I was curious is because I'm interested in how you chart the way in which the position has changed over the last five or so years at the highest level, between the different approaches that offenses are taking, the different dynamics of how defense is being coached, the way that the rules have changed, the way that technology has changed. What's different about being a goalie now than, say, when you were getting recruited to go to Georgetown?
I mean, just the fact that there's a lot more talent out there, and the fact that there's, you know, a lot of teams that are up and coming, and like I said earlier, anyone can pretty much beat anyone. So, you know, when you have a hot goalie and you have a hot hand, you can pretty much beat any team. And I think that's pretty remarkable when a goalie can have that many saves and control a game like that. But I think, you know, for me, I just try to, you know, focus on those little things and try to ignore the outside stuff, whether that's if I'm handling a lot of shots a game, or if my defense is playing great and I have to deal with not having too many shots and, you know, just trying to get in the rhythm of the game. But it's definitely been a learning experience coming in from freshman year and until now as a senior. I think, you know, just for scouting purposes, since I played my freshman year till now, it's obviously when you're going against guys and teams, they can start to understand your tendencies. So I think that definitely changed the landscape of the game when you know people are scouting you, and you have to kind of realize that you do have some weaknesses in your game, and that's something that I've tried to deal with, whether that's not this year or in past years, just trying to realize my weaknesses and build off of those.
It's a really interesting comment. You know, the way I'm thinking about it, I remember when I started inside lacrosse in 2008, I tried to chart the way in which multi-year starters progressed or regressed in terms of their save percentage and try to find correlation and then compare it to face-off specialists. And one of the comments that I would get from assistant coaches is how important scouting is to a goalie and how significant, you know, his flaws can be exposed by virtue of the opponents knowing more about where his tendencies are, where his weaknesses are. And your comment is really well received in the sense that, you know, internet connections, how much faster and easier it is to access video, you know, and how much more likely your opposing shooters might be to watch it than they would have been 5 years ago, because, you know, their stream is not going to buffer on their iPad and their coach has been able to isolate, you know, 50 shots that all show something about an opposing goalie. That's really interesting. That's something I haven't given enough thought to. But
yeah, and I think our Coach Shriver's definitely this year been a big help with that for me. Just, you know, after a game saying, look, people are starting to shoot here on you. let's try to work on that this practice. And like you said, just with how things have changed today, you know, there's a lot more access to whether that's film or just the ability to seek out more information on your opponent. So like you said, it's definitely a really interesting factor in the game today.
Well, Nick, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations on the Hoyas start to the season, and best of luck as you can continue to prepare for Marquette.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Ohio State defenseman Eric Evans, whose Buckeyes are squaring their sights for a Sunday showdown against Notre Dame. Obviously, the Fighting Irish coming off of a big midweek result, losing 13-12 in South Bend against the University of Michigan, a team that this Ohio State squad knows well. Eric, did you guys watch the Notre Dame-Michigan game live on Wednesday?
You know, we weren't really focused about it too much. We spent really addressed the week and just spent most of it overviewing ourselves and what we needed to do. I know some of the guys watched it live at their house. Some of the guys had class, but for us, it was just kind of a normal work day, and we had a great day of practice, and that's kind of all we were focused on.
Understood, but from a preparing for Notre Dame standpoint, what is the value of watching a game live versus getting a scouting report and digesting film clips, particularly from a defensive standpoint, where I'm sure that you and your coaching staff go through a lot of film in order to know what to prepare for? What's the difference between watching a game live versus watching things that have been prepared for the game plan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the main difference is you just realize how they play with the flow of the game. A lot of times you watch clips and you're seeing a lot of highlights or you're seeing a lot of their bad plays, but when you watch a game live, you can really see what they do every possession, how fast they get in their sets, they move the ball around. So I think just preparing for defensively, it's nice just to see how they get in the flow of their offense and the rhythm of the game.
Shifting the focus back to the season as it's unfolded, Buckeyes 5-3, and prior to your game against Denver, you had been involved in four consecutive one-goal games. What's it been like to be a part of a squad that has been in so many close games so far this year?
I think it's kind of positive for us. We've had some close ones, had some one-goal games, but at the end of the day, that's just going to make us a tougher team to beat down the road. When we get in our conference playing Big Ten, every team we have left on our schedule is good. So we know that every game coming down the road is going to be a close game, and we feel like we're a battle-ready team. And we just feel like it's a real positive for us, and it's something that we can kind of use to our advantage going down the season.
Coming off of a 12-7 loss to Denver, that featured some really bright spots and moments as you made the very difficult trip to the Rocky Mountains and took on a high-quality opponent. What are the takeaways from that game against the Pioneers?
For us, I think the main thing we took away was just kind of managing the moments of a game, kind of hitting that pause button and just focus on getting the next stop or getting the next play under your belt. We thought we played a good game for a majority of it, but we went through a 10-minute spurt where Denver just went on a run and we didn't have a great response to it, and that was ultimately the difference in the game. So the major difference that we took out of it was just kind of trusting ourselves and our scheme and knowing that we are a good and talented team and kind of just pressing pause and focusing on getting that next play.
As I mentioned, Notre Dame coming to the horseshoe. What have you seen on film from the Fighting Irish?
Honestly, we haven't even done film yet. We're still working on ourselves, but we know they're a very prideful group. They're a very talented group. They're a group that's going to play hard every play, so we know that we're going to have to be ready. And for us, you know, it's really our main season that we've had so far is just kind of focusing on ourselves and just making sure that we're taking care of our little details and not changing our game too much for any opponent.
Final out of conference game before entering Big Ten play. What's it like at this point in the season when you've got one big one left and then, in some people's terms, the second season starts?
Yeah, you know, we kind of, for our approach out here, we kind of just take it one week at a time. Focus, right now we're focused on Notre Dame. We're going to try to get the best result we can on Sunday with a win, and then return it to Big Ten play, and it kind of just resets the schedule at 0-0. So for us, we're not even really focused on Big Ten play right now. We're just focused on going out and getting the next win on Sunday.
All right. Well, Eric Evans, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Best of luck as you can continue your preparation, and we look forward to watching this one on Sunday.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college gear as well. All purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com or download their iPhone app today.
Terry, I apologize. I was unable to secure
a
championship-winning singlet for you. I'm sorry.
What who's rocking the best gear between Michigan Tech, Clarkson, et al.? I got to think that Michigan Tech gear.
No, you got to go on Michigan Tech's website and take a look at their uniforms. They're based on like a 1930s model. And this is something I think teams like in lacrosse, like Johns Hopkins and Princeton, teams who go back, you know, prior to World War II and that era should every year have a throwback. I love throwback uniforms. There's some beautiful Hopkins stuff that I've tried to encourage them. And maybe now that they switch to Under Armour, they will. But this Michigan Tech black and gold, it looks like the Pittsburgh Steelers with it, you know, the design straight out of the 1930s. It's just gorgeous. The lines and the patterns, and it takes you back. And you know, the nameplate is in a different spot. It's lower on the back, but they've received all sorts of awards for their black road jersey, and that's what they'll be in tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock on ESPN2.
You mentioned what we'll be watching. There's a lot to watch. Hopefully by now, all of you set your DVRs, tuned in 7:30 Thursday evening as the season 2018 Chapter 6 debuted on ESPNU. If not, check your guide for repeats, or check out the season2018.com on Monday. The version that's actually going to be uploaded to the website is going to be a little bit different. We did a TV version that included some stuff from Chapter 5 because presumably the TV audience hadn't seen it, so we wanted to get them up to speed. It's kind of when we hit the field.
Smart.
Yeah, going forward, the episodes will match, but there will be some stuff that
smart.
Will not have seen in Chapter 6 on the TV version, particularly from, I think, Ohio State's game against Marquette. And there was one other one that had some, I think the Hopkins-Syracuse game also didn't make it into the TV show, but did make it onto the web version.
Yeah, I'm loving it. You guys, it's a great look inside these programs. My only question would be, when do you pull the plug on Syracuse and Ohio State when their seasons completely go dumpster fire?
We will talk a little bit about that as we talk about the games that lie ahead. The thing I will say, though, is my favorite scene from Chapter 6 is Nick Myers addressing his squad in the hallway after their loss to Denver at Peter Barton Stadium. And, I mean, keep in mind that that happened, I mean, when you're listening to this, 6 days ago. And it's already aired on TV as part of, like, a well-edited, all-encompassing look. So shout out to Jason Johnson for the quick work on that one.
Yeah. Well, it's got to have a cross section.
Yeah.
We're going to have winners, we're going to have losers, and that's part of the deal. So, you know, it is what it is. If it's going to be a true reality TV show, it's going to capture the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows and everything in between. That's just what it's
going to
be.
We knew that four teams were not going to win the national championship when we embarked on this endeavor.
So. Correct.
11:30 a.m. ESPNU. For the Doyle Smith, is it the cup? The Doyle Smith Cup trophy?
It is a cup. It's a large cup. It's a gold cup. It's heavy. You can't lift it with one hand. Virginia and Hopkins down in Charlottesville on the grass. I'm not going to say inclement weather, but it's not going to be spring yet down there. I believe the temperature could be in the 40s. Could be a little precipitation. Las Vegas Lions has this as a pick'em, which surprises me. I thought that the Jays could be favored by a half or maybe a goal. Totals 24. I think there'll be some goals scored in this game because I think that Hopkins can run and counterattack Virginia. I thought it was interesting last week, Terry. Notre Dame chose to play you know, the Queens line to line up the guys in the red coats and fire, and they played such a slow game against Virginia. If I were the Fighting Irish, in hindsight, that's a way you can jumpstart your offense. You know, again, you play to win the game. They did, but I didn't like the way they approached that game, and I don't know. Maybe that carried over, or maybe it was the Saturday night St. Patrick's Day that led to that Wednesday defeat.
I kept watching that game, coming back to your, you got to run on a runner. And the thing about it was they started to run more in the fourth quarter when they needed to. But I agree with you that it was a game that hinged on, well, I wouldn't say it hinged on, but was sealed by two John Sexton caused turnovers in the last 50 seconds that everybody's making a big deal out of. And it shouldn't have. Should have been over a lot earlier than that, because I thought that on aggregate, Notre Dame performed considerably better than Virginia. Duke Syracuse 130 ESPNU immediately following that Virginia Hopkins.
Oh, last thing on the Notre Dame, because Notre Dame plays Ohio State on Sunday.
Yes.
On ESPNU, I believe. We'll probably get to that game. But guess who? This is just, I got to bring this up while it's on my mind. Chris Cotter and Kark had to interview Kevin Corrigan this morning, first thing for their game on Sunday. How do you think that went?
I don't know. Can you tell me?
Yeah. After a Wednesday night loss, the next morning he's on the phone with the commentators for the Sunday game. I mean, that's just bad timing. I would have said, Coach, you know what? We'll catch up with you Friday or Saturday. You're better off having your coffee and looking at tape today than talking to us.
As someone who spoke to Kevin Corrigan after Notre Dame's loss to Maryland, and who is someone who has spoken to Kevin Corrigan about his feelings for Michigan, I can't imagine it went well.
Yeah, I don't know how it went. I just felt bad for my comrades.
Duke Syracuse, 1:30 Saturday, ESPNU. The Orange traveled to Durham. You know, I saw Duke against Towson. I thought that they were a team that just wanted to get through the game, get on their chartered flight to Cleveland, play a game the next day against Cleveland State, fly home, end spring break, and get their ACC season started. Towson didn't want to let them be that team, and so it was a little bit dicey, but ultimately I thought that Duke demonstrated the depth of their capacity by scoring the last three goals and, you know, really kind of, despite some controversial calls at the end of the game, come away with not a convincing, not a win that was won handily, but one that was not in doubt late.
Towson is improving. We've seen that firsthand from their effort at week one against Johns Hopkins. They show up 3 weeks later and play Loyola with a completely different offense, guys in different spots, different personnel, looked better. So they're getting better and better. You know, I see them and Hofstra being the kings of the CAA. But Duke, it was kind of a blah week. I mean, honestly, you let Towson tie it up, you pull ahead, Gutterding and Connolly, Peter Connolly, were outstanding in that win. And you hop on a plane the next day and you end up shutting out Cleveland State in the second half. JT Giles Harris and Cade Van Raphorst doing a nice job. Danny Fowler was excellent in the Towson win. So maybe that's the takeaway, that Duke played good defense basically two games in a row.
The thing that was most concerning about the Cleveland State win for me is not only that they put up just 9 goals against Cleveland State. I'm sure that the Vikings came with a good game plan and were fired up to play. But the fact that it took 5 goals and an assist from Gutterding to get there, that strikes me as a game that you should see an influx of contributions from your depth of scoring. And for me, it feels like, with the exception of Connolly, it's going the other way for the Blue Devils. They're getting contributions out of fewer guys than they were at the beginning of the year.
Well, it was Brad Smith and Connolly who had the great games against Loyola shorties. But I agree with you. Now, that's a tough situation, because that's where you're coming back on less than 24 hours rest. And if you get off to a good start and you can jump out to a lead, then everybody's going to play. So the bench is anticipating getting PT. Your starters may be a little worn out. And so it's kind of a tough dynamic. It's like, hey, guys, can you play a little better so I can get in maybe and get a couple runs? And I don't know how you approach that as a coach. Do you start your second midfield there, but you can't risk giving Cleveland State that kind of early momentum. So it's that's such a weird dynamic. I applaud Coach Danowski for the aggressive scheduling, and he had a charter flight, so I was a little jealous. I was in Cleveland the night before. I got 2 hours of sleep after wrestling and flew home at 6 a.m. Meredith, their SID for both wrestling and lacrosse, actually covered the wrestling. They had a couple guys. And then she stayed in town and went over to the indoor facility for the noon face-off,
no,
I believe.
Dude, she flew Saturday morning to Towson. She was there and then flew back with the team to Cleveland.
Oh, wow. So she missed her guy. Her heavyweight Casper got pinned in the consolation round. She wasn't there for that. But that's okay. She was the hardest working SID in the country last week.
It was remarkable. What do the Orange bring to Durham coming off of a loss against Rutgers last Sunday in which the wheels really fell off? I think they were up 8-7 and got outscored 7-2.
Yeah, another horrible third quarter, right? That's been a trend for them this year. I don't know. You know, this is a game. Duke's favored by 3.5. I have no feelings on this game either way. I don't know what to expect from Syracuse. I honestly...
Yeah, I said last week they were the most inconsistent top 20 team, and I feel like that Rutgers' performance showed it in one game.
Duke's offense could tear their off-ball D apart like Hopkins did. You know, Hopkins looked like the greatest passing offense since Princeton's dynasty in the late 90s. Duke maybe will do the same thing to Cuse. I don't know. You know, the face-off battle there, interesting. Neither team is exceptional. We'll see. Syracuse needs to find a little more of an identity on offense. You know, Dordovic's kind of gone quiet since that Virginia performance. Teams have pulled him. They don't have an alpha male on offense. They don't have a 22. Nothing's coming easy for them right now, and their fan base is on the ledge, much like Hopkins' fan base was on the ledge earlier this year. Don't go to the lax power Syracuse forum. You don't want to read it. Don't go there.
10 p.m. Eastern Time, Pacific Coast Shootout. This is the closest thing that we get to Pac-12 at night in men's lacrosse. Maryland versus North Carolina. I mean, I would imagine that your take is going to be relatively similar to the Syracuse-Duke game in the sense that one team comes in heavily favored, the other one has continuous struggles, and Carolina needs this game more than Syracuse needs the Duke game.
Carolina needs to play better. You know, I don't know, results, again, my overall impressions of Penn State's wrestling program is they just focus on wrestling well. And then when they do, they usually win. So they're not as final score oriented. And I try not to be that way on my poll also. You've seen, I moved Cornell up last week off a loss. So for Carolina, win, lose, or draw, they got to play better. They just have really struggled. And I get the feeling that if Maryland can possess and win faceoffs, they will abuse Carolina's defense. If Carolina plays zone like they did against Denver, it'll be a lower scoring game. But the fans out in California certainly won't enjoy it. It'll be interesting to see. GW Mix does a great job with that event. I think it's great, awesome for the sport that these coaches and players get to go out to California and showcase high quality games like this. This is a real positive for everybody.
You mentioned it earlier. Noon Sunday, ESPNU, Ohio State versus Notre Dame in the Horseshoe. We've got Eric Evans talking about how Notre Dame, they hadn't even really gotten to film yet as of Thursday. They were focused on themselves coming away from that Denver loss and making things right internally. And I would imagine that for the Fighting Irish on a quick turnaround from a midweek loss to Michigan, the same is going to be true as well. This is going to be an interesting one because while once again, similar to Duke and Maryland, Notre Dame could justifiably be a not insignificant favorite. Ohio State needs to make something happen. You know, backs against the wall for Syracuse, Carolina, and Ohio State. And to your point last week that there were 11 games that you thought could have unexpected results, and Drexel's win over Georgetown ended up being the one
Bingo.
That goes above.
Somebody called that.
To me, the theme of this weekend is, do the teams that have their backs against the wall respond?
Yeah, Ohio State's issue has been offense and the lack of offense. You know, getting decent face-off play, but because they lost all those midfielders, those good penetrating midfielders from last year. It's Jack Jasinski, and I mean, who else is a Dodger? And so LeClaire's not getting any kind of step down shots this year. I mean, look at his numbers and compare them to what they looked like when that team was humming last year. The good news is Ohio State continues to play strong defense. They are on a possession-based model. I think they're doing pretty strong. So this will be interesting. Notre Dame, again, off that loss, specialists, you know, they could lose the faceoff battle to Ohio State, and that would keep this game close and low scoring. So that's what I see. I don't like this game. There's two games. There's one game on the board that just screams at me. You know, NCAA lacrosse, don't bet on it. But if you're going to bet on it, you can take Yale getting as 1.5 favorites over Princeton at home. Are you kidding me? They should win that game by 3.5, 4.
We're picking games, or I am. I'm picking games.
How is Yale only favored by 1.5 over Princeton?
I like Princeton more than you do.
I like Princeton's offense.
I like Princeton more than I expected to heading into this season, too.
But their defense slides, doesn't slide, sends two guys, goes near man, goes from the crease. I just don't have a read on that. You know, Sowers is a great player. It will be interesting to see if Chris Fake, the freshman, covers him. But I just think that Yale should be more than 1.5 goal favorite over Princeton at home.
Your favorite Bulldog, Connor Mackey, could have a big day in that one.
Yeah, exactly. And Princeton can't face off. Connor Mackey, who was hardly on the lacrosse team on Wednesday morning, he's an impressive-looking athlete, I would tell you that. Great, another great game in the Ivy League, Penn Cornell. But last thing I want to ask you, Terry, what are your thoughts, ACC Big Ten? Because the ACC, the Big Ten has not been having a great year, but in head-to-head competition against the ACC, they're doing fabulous.
The Big Ten hasn't been having a great year in context of how great last year was.
Okay.
But to me, that's a testament to how great last year was. The story of the season, for sure, is that the Big East, the Ivy League, the Patriot League, and the CAA are considerably better relative to the ACC and the Big Ten than they were last year.
Yes.
I think the Big Ten is better than the ACC for the second year in a row, and I think that, I don't want to say there's no end in sight, but like, and ultimately, this is probably going to be a Maryland-led situation in the sense that, you know, as the benchmark holder in the conference, how well they perform is going to then be equivalently compared to whichever is the best program in the ACC that year. And I can imagine a couple of the other teams taking that mantle, Johns Hopkins chief among them, but there aren't four teams that can compete to be the best on a year-in, year-out basis the way that you see in the ACC. And that's where Maryland's continuity does make it such that I think the Big Ten is going to remain the superior conference into the future.
Yeah, we'll see. But, you know, the rankings, I started working on that last night, just going over some of these midweek games. And this is hard. Like, how far do you drop Notre Dame? You know, if Yale beats Princeton, how high can you put them? What do you do with the Hopkins Virginia winner and loser? What do you do with Villanova? Villanova beat Penn State and Yale. That's pretty good. And I got them ranked below Yale. Should they be above Yale? Now I'm kind of looking at it in hindsight. They also beat Penn, correct?
Mm-hmm. They
and Penn is up there. So if
were
Penn
not
keeps winning,
very competitive against Maryland.
I know that. Well, Maryland's in that upper tier. Villanova is, to me, a tier two. Just don't know where. And then the tier three teams like Rutgers, you know, Army, Syracuse, or you know, like Lehigh, how high can they go now? The rankings, to me, this is a difficult year for rankings. I don't know. I've been doing this a long time, and I continue to struggle. And it's a lot of work.
I'm right there with you.
Hint, hint, I need a raise. Oh, no. It's just a lot of work. I mean, and you go around in circles. I mean, it's A beats B, B beats C, you know, D ties two of them. It's difficult.
Maybe I could get you a $10 off discount for hymns.com.
Yeah, I need a math degree.
My true picks. Lock it in. Hopkins over Virginia, Cornell over Penn, Hobart over St. Joe's, Denver over Towson, Maryland over Carolina, Notre Dame over Ohio State.
Well, from the people who gave you Drexel beating Georgetown. They were plus 400 last week, by the way. Cha-ching goes the trolley.
There's your race.
We like Yale over Princeton, and you can put anything you want in Albany over UMass Lowell at the minus 1,400 to earn a dollar.
UMass Lowell being 4-4, that's not an insignificant story.
Yeah, well, Navy's going to give Lehigh a little bit of a game. Lehigh's probably starting to think they're too good for themselves. Bucknell's an interesting matchup against Loyola, although Loyola dodged a bullet by the cancellation or the postponement of their midweek game.
Yep.
That helps the Greyhounds. Army Colgate's another classic, a real good game. And then St. John's is a lot better than people think. Hofstra's got to go to St. John's. Coming off a loss, a midweek game. St. John's, take a look at their resume, Terry. I got them sniffing around the top 20.
Mm-hmm. You're not the only one. There are a lot of folks who have prepared for St. John's that say that they are one of the more underrated squads.
Well, enjoy the hockey, Terry, with Melrose and Buccigross. I never know what to expect. Barry wears me out off the ice, let's just say. And then I'm back to lacrosse next week, doubleheader week. We'll talk about that next week.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next week.
Don't quit.
Get ready, 'cause here I come.
And never quit.
We work for the fans. We work for the 71 Division I teams.